after this.
Hello, it's Richard Osman here. I have some questions for you. How old would you say Bruce Willis is?
He is a rather dashing looking.
How old would you say Moira Stewart is?
She was born young.
Yeah.
How old would you say I am?
Oh, for goodness sake.
If you're already thinking of those answers, then you are going to enjoy the birthday cake game, my brand new quiz on Radio 4. All we do is try and work out how old celebrities are.
How old is Tom Hardy?
Is he the fat one? Or the little thin-faced funny one?
We know this isn't Laurel and Hardy.
No.
The birthday cake game, 31st of August, 6:30, BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
And now the doctor and comedian Phil Hammond reveals the funny, frank and sometimes poignant stories of day-to-day life in the NHS as the Royal Hospital for Children and Young People in Edinburgh opens its doors to Dr. Phil's Bedside Manner.
Gorgeous, lovely staff of the Royal Hospital for Children and Young People here in Edinburgh. Please, pop your pants down halfway, turn onto your left-hand side, draw your knees up to your chest, take a few deep breaths and prepare to be healed by Dr. Phil. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. So what I'm doing in this show is I go around the NHS and like a giant ginger magpie, I sweep down and I steal your best stories. Some of them are funny, some of them are sad, some of them might get you struck off. I apologise if you've told one of those and you're up in a professional conduct committee in a few months' time. It's really important, I think, when you think about health and healthcare, to, instead of pulling people out of the river of illness, we need to stop them falling in the first place. So I'd like to invite you to think about your own health, and I'd like to invite you to take what I call Dr. Phil's Pleasure Pledge. Okay, it's entirely voluntary. You don't have to do this if you don't want to. If you feel able to, hold the hands of the people on your table. If you're feeling a bit COVID insecure, you don't have to do that. And I'd like you to repeat after me Dr. Phil's Pleasure Pledge. You ready? I pledge to pleasure myself in a safe and sustainable way. And Sonia's going to lead the team because she is a team leader. Sonia, I pledge.
Okay, I'm Sonia Joseph. I am a consultant paediatrician, which means I'm a senior children's doctor in the Royal Hospital for Children and Young People, Edinburgh. And I am the clinical director for medical paediatric specialties, which just means I'm very old and I'm very in charge of a lot of very clever people, or okay. I try to be.
So tell us about the ethos of this hospital. So you moved to a new site.
Yes.
It is an extraordinary sight. I sat in someone in outpatients, a kid in outpatients, I said, what are you doing here? He said, I just came here to play. There's nothing wrong with me, but it's amazing. There's a castle, there's dragons. Were you involved as doctors in the design? Because actually buildings make a big difference to how healthcare works, don't they?
So we were very lucky in that we've got our Edinburgh Children's Hospital charity. Yeah. So they had a working group with a bunch of clinicians who came from all the different aspects of clinical care. Mm. Many of our appointments and our play staff were involved as well, and our outpatient nurses. And a whole load of children. The whole dragon that spits fire and poos on staff came from one of the children.
Okay. Hi, I'm Heather, one of the cystic fibrosis nurses here.
And I'm Amanda, I'm another cystic fibrosis nurse.
And I'm Emily, I'm the CF pharmacist.
Well, slightly difficult admission, the only time I've really, really cried when I was a junior doctor was working with kids with cystic fibrosis back in the day when they would die fairly young, and they were lovely, and I would play with them all day, and then we lost one of them. Absolutely destroyed me. But the good news is we're much, much better at treating cystic fibrosis now, aren't we?
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you're exciting new drugs.
Yeah. Cystic fibrosis in itself isn't screamingly funny, but do the kids ever make you laugh?
All the time.
Heather, you look like a bit of a giggler to me. What kind of stuff do you laugh?
Yeah,
you've got
face.
No, you've got really
eyes.
Smiley eyes. You look as if you're giggling behind the mask.
Yes, I am. The kids are amazing. And I can't, you know, there's so many funny things that all the kids do. For some reason, they focus on my hair. Okay. I get a lot of comments about my hair. Well, your hair's like the sheep's and things like that. So they like that, you know.
And if a child says to you, you've got hair like a sheep, do you laugh or do you say that's not a polite thing to say to a woman?
I laugh because it's probably right.
When I was a junior doctor, I was known as Dr. Fumblefingers because I was clumsy. And every technical thing I did, the nurses had to follow along afterwards and do it correctly. Is that still the case? Are the nurses still teaching clumsy junior doctors how to do their jobs properly?
You're teaching clumsy consultants how to do that.
At least you're honest.
Emily, why is being a pharmacist a better option than a nurse?
You don't have to deal with the vomit and poo.
So you give them the tablets to make them vomit and poo and then you run for cover, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. It was Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And the registrar and I decided to dress up, you know, bring a bit of Christmas spirit. So he had a Santa outfit and I got given a fairy outfit.
Okay.
And I'm quite well endowed. So I'm actually taller when I lie down than I am when I stand up. And so I was in my fairy outfit and I was going around CCU, cardiac critical care. This is all adults. And we're like, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. And we're handing out presents and chatting. Halfway through, we're like chatting, Mr. Such and Such, Merry Christmas from the team. We've got a present for you. And we bought little presents for everybody. And then suddenly he went really grey and his heart rhythm looked a bit odd. And then the sister was like, you better come out, you better come out. And then it happened in cubicle 4 and cubicle 5. And then she turned around and she went, I think it's just too much with the boobs. I think it's setting them all off. You can't. So I was then banned from doing the Christmas fairy round for the rest of the CCU.
Is that in the official textbook of medicine?
No.
Breasts can trigger a cardiac arrhythmia. They now stuck you in reindeer number 3 costume, didn't they? So you can do much less harm.
Do you just stay back there, Sonia? I'm like in a full
jumpsuit. Please use the hand gel stations provided.
I am Leslie Thompson. I'm a clinical coordinator and nurse practitioner, and I just retired yesterday from being working in Sitka since 1987.
Wow, and why have you retired so young?
Thank you very much for that. So I went to work in PICU, Paediatric Intensive Care Unit,
Okay. And
I was looking after this 2-year-old girl who had meningococcal septicemia, and it sort of really resonated with me because my son was the same age and she was really, really sick. I mean, I was in the cubicle from about 1 o'clock till I finished my shift, and the consultants were there, ICU consultants, there was 2 nurses. She was just so, so sick. She kept a rest in every 10 minutes.
Oh, my word.
And I just remember, you know, there were so many doctors and medics in this cubicle, and I remember the mother looking at me and saying to me, please don't let her die, and I was just so choked up. She did make a recovery. They raised money for meningococcal. And so I remember every year at Sick Kids, we had a fete in the back in the car park.
Yeah.
And so the night before that fete, I had this dream about that child. And so on the day of the fete, I was working. I thought, I'll go down during my break. And I bumped into them. And the mum just looked at me. She went, I was dreaming about you last night. And I said, were you? And I mean, I am not religious in any way or believe in ghosts that everybody said the scene in the hospital, you know, but
such a significant moment for both of you. So obviously it was up there in
it
your
was
subconscious.
Up there, you know, and that girl has survived and is doing great.
Who generally eats well? Do you know what eating well is? Have you looked at the evidence? You look at the evidence, I'll tell you, bloody confusing. The Japanese eat less fat than us and have fewer heart attacks. The French eat more fat than us, fewer heart attacks. The Japanese drink less red wine than us and have fewer heart attacks. The French drink more red wine than us and have fewer heart attacks. In fact, you can eat and drink what you like. It's speaking English that kills you. As my Auntie Queenie used to say, flop! If in doubt, don't put it in your mouth. That works in a number of social situations, but particularly dietary ones. I don't go for this nonsense about food is medicine. I mean, food should be nutritious and delicious. We generally say a Mediterranean diet, because most of the researchers like going to Mediterranean countries to do their research. But a wide variety of whole foods, different fruit, veg, nuts, seeds, olive oil or whatever. And in fact, most of the bugs that we see keep us healthy, particularly the bugs in our gut. The trillions of bugs in our gut need feeding and they like whole food and are really important to our health. So they've done research. They've taken the poo out of obese mice and put it into thin mice, and it makes the thin mice obese. They've taken the poo out of anxious mice and put it into happy mice, and it makes the happy mice anxious. Now, you could argue that having a strange mouse's poo shoved up you might make you slightly anxious. There could be a confounding variable there. Or it could be that the bugs in our gut, absolutely essential to our health, so feed them a range of different foods.
So I'm John McCormack. I'm the clinical director for anaesthetics and surgery, and I'm also a paediatric anaesthetist. That's my day job.
So the first thing I noticed when I walked into theatres is a kiddie car. There's a car.
Yeah.
What's that for?
So, well, what we like to do is to try and make the patient journey really as interesting and enjoyable for our patients, all bearing in mind what they're here for. So really, wherever we can enlighten that for children, we try to. So We've got a little electric car that patients can drive around to theatre. We used to have a little quad bike and such like. So if patients are of an appropriate age and size, we really encourage them to make their own way to theatre. The children are all scared, anxious. The parents are anxious when they come here, and we're really trying to minimise that. And I think you should never underestimate or undermine the privilege that you're in. Parents are handing over their most prized possession in the world. Every day, parents are handing over their children, and they trust us. So I don't ever take for granted the position that we're in and how important it is that we live up to the standards expected to us.
So what are you doing today, other than wasting time chatting to us? Today, what have you got on your agenda?
So today I am running the emergency list, so the CPOD list. So
common emergencies you see are?
Common emergencies here, broken arms.
Okay.
So if we can do a public safety message, trampolines, climbing frames.
My name is Paul Lancaster. I'm an ODP at the Royal Hospital for Sick Children in Edinburgh. My role is to help the team in their entirety, but specifically the anaesthetic side.
Okay, so operation department practitioner. Does that mean you're involved in any way at all with kids getting in cars and driving them up to theatre? Because that looks the most amazing bit of fun to me.
It's only if we're not driving the cars ourselves. So.
And how does that work? Because obviously kids are anxious, probably parents even more anxious. When you're bringing people up to theatre or seeing them come in, does that make a big difference?
It does make a big difference. A child's fear stems from the adult's concern, which is, of course, expected. But you can quite easily get them both round with just some light-hearted humour, really. It's as simple as that.
Do you tell them jokes?
We try and tell them what you could call a joke, yes. So,
do you have any favourites?
Kids love, why was Tigger in the bathroom?
Why?
He was looking for poo.
They love a poo joke, don't they?
Well, children love a poo joke. There's a classic joke that's going around which was told to us by an 11-year-old boy, but I cannot repeat it.
Yes, because, no, please do, because we'll decide whether to edit it out or not.
Why did Susie fall off the swing?
I don't know why.
She doesn't have any arms. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Not Susie. And that came from an 11-year-old boy in the anaesthetic room. So
was that as he was going in or coming out of anaesthetic?
Literally as he came in, he said, I have a joke for you. And that was it. But as you can appreciate, you really have to choose your audience with that one.
Okay, well, we can blame it on him. I didn't say that joke. And you were only the messenger, so I don't think they can attribute it to you. I think your professional qualifications are safe.
How old are you, Joshua?
10.
10. And who have you brought with you?
My dad.
And why have you come to the emergency department today, Joshua?
So I was playing football and I hurt my knee whilst doing it.
And how did you do that? Did someone foul you?
I don't know how it happened, it just started hurting. Okay. And I couldn't walk on it.
Did you have to come off the pitch?
Yeah.
Dad, are you a footballer too?
Yeah, well, no.
Were you?
My career ended when I was about 15, I think.
Was that because of a knee injury?
No, that's because I wasn't very good.
Okay, and tell us about your boy. Is he a good goalkeeper?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
And is this the first injury he's had?
First that he's needed to come here, yeah.
Joshua, is your dad a good coach? Does he tell you good things or does he tell you nonsense?
Sometimes nonsense.
You're going to be in big trouble for this. Well, Mum, tell us a bit about Fabulous Sky. What's she in here for?
Sky has a rhabdomyosarcoma, so she is here for round 3 of 9 rounds of chemo.
Oh, my word.
We're doing well so far, aren't we, Sky? Yeah. She had a little tiny lump that was the size of a pea about a summer ago, and they thought it was something else for quite a long time, and then it grew so large that we thought it was getting in her way of her walking, so we brought her back in.
So that's like a mum's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
How are you coping?
I think we're doing okay. We've just moved house. Because, you know, nothing else to do.
I have a full house. Let's do everything stressful we can do all in one go. COVID, move house.
So we're doing a bit of renovating. And
Sky's chemo.
Yes, Sky's chemo. And we've got big brother Jude at home as well. So all busy.
And she loves her play. Were you surprised when you came here that the building is amazing and it looks like a theme park. But also you've got play therapists, music therapists. Was that something you were expecting?
No, not at all. It was fantastic. And just, yeah, we've been blown away by all the facilities and just and how much it makes a difference as well. Like she, when the music is here, it changes her day. Like it literally takes her out of herself.
So tell us, Hayley, what's the trick of connecting with kids of all ages with different personalities? How do you do it?
I think it's all in the beginnings, in the initial approach. We were kind of wearing our red t-shirts so they can see that we're different from the nursing staff and stuff like that. Our role is basically to bring fun and relief from anything that might be traumatic.
Five little monkeys jumping on the bed. One fell off and bumped his head. Mummy called the doctor.
Emily Hill, I'm the trainee play specialist in the Lochranz Award, which is for oncology and haematology.
There will be some people listening to this who didn't realise hospitals had play specialists and don't really have a clue what they are. So how would you describe it? So what would you say to someone that says, why do we need a play specialist in a hospital?
Play specialists are needed to help normalise being in hospital for children. We carry out distraction for procedures. We cope with procedural anxiety, so if children are nervous about getting cannulas put in.
So tell us how you do that. So if a kid is phobic of needles or hates the cannula, how do you distract them or persuade them to have it done?
So we first sit down with the child and then we explain what procedure is going to be carried out. For our kids that need NG tubes, we put them into dolls or teddies.
Oh, wow.
So that they can visualise what it's going to look like.
An NG tube, a tube that goes up your nose and down into your stomach. I don't really fancy having one done, but isn't that interesting that you do it in a doll first?
Yeah.
And have you found that that actually makes them more accepting of the procedure?
100%.
Is it appropriate to laugh with kids? And do they laugh even when they're really sick?
Yeah. We actually had a wee girl last week and she was feeling a wee bit low, so we got a syringe and filled it up with water and we were just squirting the nurses with it and she was having a great time.
What, here on the ward?
Yeah, in the ward.
Wow, can we play? Is it for adults too? That's great. I haven't had a water fight in ages.
I'm Fiona Jones. I'm a volunteer doing meet and greet at the door at the hospital. I'm just here one morning a week, and so we meet people coming in who are coming for outpatient appointments usually. And it's quite a lot of anxious people coming in. We don't know where they're going, so we can help with that anxiety. 5 years ago, they looked after my husband when he had a stroke. And he died after 2 weeks in intensive care. And they also looked after my parents. I owe them a lot. It's good to be part of it.
I'm Dr. Phil. Holly, you have to tell me who you've brought with you today. Who have you got with you?
My mummy.
Your mummy? And who's this then, sitting on the other side?
My sister.
What are you doing here today? Who are you seeing?
The doctor.
The doctor? And do you know why you're seeing the doctor?
To get my heart checked.
To get your heart checked. So tell me, Mum, what's going on with Holly's heart?
She's got a heart murmur still. Okay. From they noticed it at 8 weeks old and then they picked it up again last year.
Can you run around, Holly, and do all the things with your friends when you're playing? What's your favourite game? What do you like playing most?
Hide and seek.
Where do you hide, Mum, when you're playing hide and seek? Where's your favourite play?
Behind the curtain.
And that's easy to find, is it? Yeah. Is it fairly obvious you're behind the curtain?
So that's like your feet.
You do see my feet.
So you're not making it too difficult there, are you, Mum?
No.
Hiding behind the curtain, poking out with your feet. Okay. And how about sister? Where do you hide when you're playing hide and seek?
Usually in the dog's cage.
Is the dog in there at the time you're sharing a cage? Do you hide behind the dog? What dog do you have, Holly?
Don't have any dog.
We've not got it. We got her put to sleep last week.
Oh.
So.
Drops of fumble fingers walking into that one.
I know. It was a German Shepherd, though.
Oh, gee.
We had a lovely kid down in the emergency department who was playing football. Now, if watching the Scottish football team isn't bad for your psychological health, this poor kid, egged on by his father, trying to reproduce the goal etched in Scottish memory forever, your opening game of the European Championship, somebody lobbed your goalkeeper from the halfway line and your goalkeeper was way off his line and the ball went in. It was all slightly embarrassing. And this dad persuaded his son to reenact it. And so his dad lobbed the ball up and his son ran backwards towards the goal and collided with the goalpost and ended up with a head injury in the emergency department. And it was all slightly embarrassing. And I said, what did your mum say? And she said, my mum called my dad an anus. And I said, oh. And I said, do you know what that means? He said, no, what does it mean? And I said, well, actually, I think your mum was paying your dad a compliment. Do you not think? Because when you think about it, he said, what is an anus? I said, an anus is like your bum hole. He said, your bumoli? And the great thing about your anus or your bumoli is that it... You're right. Is that it can tell what's coming, can't it? Without having to signal to your brain, your anus knows, if it's working properly, whether what's coming is a solid, a liquid, or a gas, doesn't it? Isn't that extraordinary? Yeah, it can. If it's working, you know whether you can safely let it out in the trouser department or whether you need to squat down, don't you? If it's working properly. I think it's the most amazing thing. So I think being called an anus suggests you're being called an independent thinker. You can tell what's coming, you can predict the future. Your anus can tell the difference between a solid, a liquid, a gas, but sadly not a doorknob.
My name's Dave Beattie. I'm a consultant general paediatrician working here in the Royal Hospital for Children and Young People. When I was working in adult A&E on a night shift, a gentleman came in with a doorknob in his rear.
His
obvious rationale was that he was cooking naked and lived alone. And when he had finished preparing his meal, he thought, oh gosh, I've got my drink in one hand and I have my plate in the other. So how on earth do I get through to the living room? And he described sort of just using his derriere to try and nudge open the door. And unfortunately, it resulted in an emergency. But the best part was that when he somehow managed to call the emergency services and they had to break into his house to get to him because he lived alone. And when they reached the living room door, they struggled to open the living room door because he was on the other end of the living room doorknob. So
did they have to bring him in with the door or did they take the door of the engine?
Well, we didn't. I mean, the door itself was not present in the emergency department. The doorknob was. So we didn't actually... I was struggling at the time to remain calm and professional, so we didn't go into as much forensic detail about the removal of said door.
I'm Katie Curry, I'm the charge nurse of the emergency department. You can call me Matron.
And how long have you worked in emergency medicine?
In emergency medicine for 8 years at the moment.
And all of that with kids?
All of that with kids. My big thing is kids want to be better. They don't think of themselves as being sick.
Yeah. They're also extraordinarily brave, aren't they? It's often the parents flapping around who have the high levels of anxiety and
Absolutely.
The kids who take it on the chin.
Oh, they very much are our workload rather than the children.
Having worked in peds and with adults, the thing that strikes me seems to be the difference is that kids tend to put things in their upper holes and adults tend to put things in their lower holes.
Yeah, we have little problem with that. Definitely things up noses and in the ears are our bigger problem. It's amazing how many different types of beans you get up noses.
And are they generally easy to get out if they've been up there for months?
Depends how upset the child is. Okay. Sometimes.
And how can you tell when a kid comes in? Because parents are really anxious. Can you spot fairly quickly, without doing any tests, whether a kid is seriously unwell or not, just by looking and observing the situation?
Usually, yes.
And what are you looking out for?
I'm looking for a child who's quiet, disinterested, and not really fussy if we do too much to them.
Those are warning signs. So the kids are giving a good old yell and are objecting to what you're doing to them are generally pretty good.
I worry less about them.
Are they ever rude? Are the kids ever rude to the staff?
The kids can be rude. Well, I don't think the kids aren't
just
rude.
Tell it as they
kids
see
are
it.
Honest.
Okay, so what are the most honest things kids have said to you or your staff that you feel you can share?
I have been called bubbly, which it then turned out was actually fat.
Nothing wrong with a bit of bubbly, I reckon.
My name's Sophie Bongiorno. I'm a staff nurse at the Sick Kids Hospital in Edinburgh and I work in recovery.
So what do you love about working in recovery? What makes it special?
Oh, it's just everything. Meeting the parents, all the kids coming through. Every day is completely different here, so it's lovely.
Now, my experience of both adults and children coming out of anaesthetic, because they often say strange things if they're coming into recovery, like, oh, it feels like I've had a vodka or something.
Yeah.
Have you had kids saying peculiar things?
Especially the older kids, I think. We've had a lot of them waking up saying, oh, you know, I love you, man. You're the best. Like,
what do you?
Yeah, like you've been so lovely. Thank you so much. So sometimes we have patients that have had like a lot of teeth out. So sometimes they've actually had a few more teeth out than they've expected. So we've had to make it a bit funny and just say, you know, well, the tooth fairy's taken an extra few teeth. So, you know, you're going to get an extra couple
of
pennies.
And does it make you feel, I guess, a bit sad in a way, when you see loads of kids have to have loads of their teeth removed? Mm-hmm. Does it make you think, gosh, we should be doing prevention a bit better?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really difficult because it's a lot of different kids. Like, sometimes it's behavioural, sometimes it's not.
Just occasionally. I know most kids recover and it's extraordinary what we can do, but just occasionally, sad thing happens and kids die.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that when you work in paediatric nursing? Do you support each other or do you just go
definitely.
Home and figure it out yourself?
No, there's a lot of things here in the hospital, you know, that support the nurses.
And it's okay to cry occasionally, it's
yeah,
when it's
definitely.
Laugh, isn't it?
That, yeah, we're all yeah. human, you know, it's a normal thing to do. Yeah. The amount of tears we've had in here, either laughter or crying, you yeah. know, we've had a bit of everything in here.
Are you allowed to hug each other now because of COVID?
Oh, it's lovely, yeah. definitely, lots yeah. On, lots of hugging now, which is nice.
Well, that's good, thank you.
Of course, sir. Still keeping safe.
Thanks, sir.
I'm Kenneth McWilliam, I'm a consultant paediatric neurologist.
Your dad was also a paediatric neurologist?
That's right, yeah.
That's quite unusual.
Well, some things are genetic conditions. I guess we deal in a few of those. I don't know that that is written down as one, though. Yeah.
But was he a big influence on you? I mean, did you watch him work when you were a kid or growing up? Or
We used to go to hospital with my dad a lot.
Okay.
I've got some really clear memories of going to the intensive care unit, actually, in another hospital.
What, when you were 7 or something?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I've got, you know, you go there, you wait in here, I'm going to go and do my ward round.
Was he proud of you when you also became a paediatric neurologist?
I don't know, we don't talk about that sort of thing.
Did he ever has he ever said to you, I'm really proud of you, Ken?
The thing he was most proud of me was when I managed to fix my washing machine.
Right.
And I sent a video of him having fixed the washing machine and it turned on and was sounding beautiful.
Okay.
I'm really proud of that.
So the amazing
as well.
Treatment of kids with SMA, he doesn't say I'm really proud of you. You fix the washing machine. And he says, that's McKenneth. That's my boy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I remember when I started, we always used to have a hospital show and it was always called something awful like Back Passage to India or Beverly Hills Plop. I remember three student nurses, the first house job I did, three student nurses did a version of Merry Christmas Everybody by Slade. And the chorus was, so here it is, geriatrics, everybody's had a stroke. Let's get the turkey out and see how many choke. Now, this was 1987, and the hospital would roar with laughter. If you did that now, it would be on the front page of the Daily Mail. Somebody would have photographed it. It would be the end of the world.
Yep.
So how do you find that release for slightly darker emergency medicine humour that you have to have? Are you still able to laugh at stuff?
Yes, I think we can laugh. I think you're right. I was also involved in hospital pantomimes and shows. We did them every Christmas.
Oh, tell us who you were. What did you play in it? What's the rudest thing you've done on stage?
I've only done a couple.
But do you remember, every hospital I worked in would have a dodgy surgeon called Killer Keen or Chopper Charlton. There was one up north known as the Terminator. And people used to celebrate it in the Christmas show. And it was part of the hospital culture.
Yeah, no, I think things have changed, but I think you can still have a laugh at work. I think we're probably seen as being much more professional now than maybe we used to be. Yeah. I'm not quite sure, but I think you can still have a laugh. You probably just need to be a bit more careful where it's done.
So in the old days, did you ever play tricks on the staff or on the nurse?
Yes.
What did you do?
So what have we done? We've put goldfish into fluid bags before.
How do you get a goldfish in a fluid bag?
Well, you stick it back up afterwards.
Finally, I'll leave you with the thoughts of Brian, my GP trainer. He was a GP for 30-odd years, and his favourite story, this is a terrible story, was a woman who'd come in with a whole list. You know, people come in with a shopping list of symptoms. And it had gone on and on and on and on, and finally she was having trouble with her periods. And he said, look, I'm really sorry, I don't have time to deal with this. You'll need a whole consultation for that. And she walked out and said to the receptionist, I'd like to book a whole consultation. And the receptionist said, what do you mean? She said, a consultation from a hole. So that was his favourite story. But I asked him when he retired, I said, sum up your 30 years in general practice. He went, saved two, killed one. So try and stay healthy. It's a very simple tick if you're a bloke. How do you know if you're healthy? It's very hard, isn't it? But it's actually easy if you're a man, because a healthy man looks about 30 years younger than his scrotum. So, Ken, if you'd like to get the little fellas out now, pass them over to Sonia. There's only so much you can do. Work is limitless. Time is limited. Nobody said on their deathbed they wish they'd spent more time looking at their emails. Thank you. I've been Dr. Phil. Thank you very much, and good night.